Radio Days Africa podcast is brought to you by the Vicks Radio Academy. Radio Days Africa 2020 is about to go live.
Welcome once again to Radio Days Africa, the virtual edition. I'm Franz Kruger, director of the Vicks Radio Academy, and we are the hosts of Africa's biggest radio gathering. I'm really pleased to be here and looking forward to the discussion. We are on day 14 of the conference, and I'm told we've already exceeded our overall target of 2,000 attendances at these events. It's just fantastic, and it's been great to explore this new way of doing things. You'll find the program and registration details at www.radiodaysafrica.co.za. A couple of housekeeping issues. Firstly, we're very keen for you to join the discussions. There'll always be an opportunity to make points and ask questions through the chat function or through the Q&A function that you'll find at the bottom of your Zoom screen. Secondly, please, we'd love to receive voice notes from you with thoughts on comments. The number is 079-528-0000. It's also on screen somewhere. Of course, if you're outside of the country, then you would need to preface that with +27. Please extend the discussion to social media. We're using hashtag RDA2020 and hashtag the new normal. I need to say a couple of words of thanks. Firstly, to the Sub-Saharan Africa Media Program of the Konrad Adenauer Foundation, whose ongoing and generous support makes the event possible. Secondly, we're also supported by Iono FM for podcasting and streaming, the Abundant Media Group, who are distributing sessions of the conference to community radio stations on their Vivid channel. We're grateful also to the support of RCS Sound Software, Crossfade Studios, and the National Association of Broadcasters. So today our topic is the SABC. Thinking about the session ahead of time, I was remembering what it was like when I joined the SABC in 1994 to be part of the new editorial team who were tasked with turning the apartheid state broadcaster into a new public broadcaster suited to the new democratic order. There was such a sense of hope and excitement at the time. Everything seemed possible. There were also some very strange features that we encountered, but this is not the moment to go into those. Unfortunately, we have to admit that the corporation has not met that promise. There's been too much political interference and too little money, or maybe too much money wasted. The blurb for the session talks about 5 difficult years. It's been more like 15, it seems to me. And yet the SABC remains central to our public life, and there are lots of good people doing valuable work there. Today, we'll talk about the immediate situation, particularly the turnaround plan and the longer-term prospects for public broadcasting in a digital time. Let me introduce the panelists. I'm not going to read lengthy bios. You can look them up. Firstly, we're very pleased to welcome Ian Plaikies, who just a few months ago took on the very difficult role of Chief Operating Officer at the SABC after a long career in various corporate roles and most recently with the South African Bureau of Standards. I'm particularly grateful to Ian for joining us because he was due to be at an emergency board meeting this morning or this afternoon. And he was excused to join us. Then there's Duduet Sang Makuse, who's National Coordinator of the SOS Public Support Public Broadcasting Coalition, who I think is the leading civil society voice on broadcasting and particularly public broadcasting. Finally, we have Hannes de Busson, who is the long-serving president of the Broadcasting, Electronic Media and Allied Workers Union. I think Hannes was at the SABC when I was there so many years ago. So he really has been around the block several times. So I thought to start off with, I would ask Ian to give us a quick overview of the plan that the SABC has put together to turn themselves around. I was really disturbed to find out that a couple of days ago, the SABC was due to present their situation to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on the topic. And we're refused. Instead, we had the Deputy Minister making some comment as if on the SABC's behalf. And then there was a long discussion, and yesterday various other people spoke who I'm sure needed to be heard. But it seems outrageous that a parliamentary committee allowed the deputy minister to, in a sense, preempt the discussion. Well, if the parliamentary subcommittee won't hear the SABC, we're very keen to hear from them. So thanks very much for joining us, Ian. And let's hear a brief overview of what SABC wants to do.
Thank you, Franz, and good afternoon to you and to Dudu, to Hannes, and to the viewers as well. I'll bring up the presentation, and please let me know once you can see it.
Yep, we can see it. Thanks.
Awesome. And thank you very much for the invitation and the opportunity for us to come and share our plans with you, and certainly to the wider audience as well. I'm sure it's no secret to people that we are in the digital vortex center. It's the eye of the storm. Now, digital vortex is basically the various industries that are plotted in terms of being most disrupted. And we have the unenviable position of being number one in that, with telecommunications following after us and the tech industry, retail, and the finance industry. And you can see how those industries are being disrupted. Life will never be the same again in those industries, and certainly other industries as well. So before digital, and we're still very much on an analog space, the mantra then was content is king. Now we in the digital era, and certainly post-digital as well, we're going to be there pretty soon, we are the consumer experiences king mantra now. And really where we find ourselves right now is actually marrying those two. Both have been content and customer experience as king. So you will remember that President Ramaphosa made a speech at the conference earlier this year, and he actually warned of massive job losses due to the implementation of 4IR. It is a worldwide phenomenon that as you digitize and automate, you need less manual people. So certainly, and I want to keep it specifically or bring it closer to radio. Radio is also in the eye of the vortex. And what does life mean for us as a SABC in the vortex? Well, 2015 was supposed to be the date where we were supposed to have digitized. In 2017, that still did not happen. There was a significant delay in the digitization of broadcasting. The only ones that were suffering was ourselves, SABC, because what that enabled was the consumer to move from the terrestrial broadcasting to a more satellite option, and our competitors certainly took advantage of the fact that we were not, through regulations and policy, allowed to play in the digital space around DTH. And that is still to today. So if you fast forward to today, there's about 4.5 million households that's still on analog, while the rest has migrated to some form of a DTH solution. And as I say, that regulation that prevented us before is still preventing us today from competing adequately in that space. So the results of 4IR is convergence and certainly blurring of boundaries. So you have one instrument now that is supposedly a telephone, but you use that instrument far less for talking than actually reading books, watching television, music, radio, and a whole host of other things as well. It's very difficult when you're looking at developing specs, for example. So if you take a television and you put it in a refrigerator, what is that product now? Is it a fridge or is it a TV or combination of it? You put a sensor in there and you can send real-time information to retailers to stock up the fridge as well. And you have three different mechanisms now there with three different standards. And that's certainly what digitization does for our industry. So we have 19 radio stations, and we have just over 29 million people tuning into those radio stations. And certainly, radio is in the eye of the storm. So there's various form factors that people consume radio, the traditional radio still being the highest at 71%. But certainly, more and more people are going to streaming, podcasts, and on-demand listening. And we need to make sure that we are able to meet those demands as well. SABC has 9 of the top 10 radio stations. Our television audience is just as high as well. Just 4 of our radio stations, we have over 20 million listeners tuning in. And we are fast digitizing this business. And we hope that, this will be concluded within this current financial year. Now let's look at the impact of digitization. Currently, we are in a very linear way. So we do the productions, we put that on our linear channels. If we have a catch up, we put it on there, and then we push it through to SVOD, and then certainly our marketing. Very, very time consuming, very labor intensive as well. But what digitization does, it enables us to basically have one area that can control all the mediums. And so your process is better utilized. It reduces your processing time. It certainly reduces time to air. There's a reduction in overhead costs and certainly a reduction in people. And you can just see here, here's manual handovers that each person does, and there's checks and balances. Yeah, there's one person doing that, and it gets consumed on whatever channel that goes out, basically. So this is where we find ourselves as an organization. It's adapt or die. We certainly do not want to become one of the other parastatals that you've seen in the newspapers where the risk of closure is very high. So if you look at this is probably the most critical time for the organization. So what is our core focuses immediately and certainly for the near future? So we're rapidly reinventing ourselves. So we've developed a new business model, and that business model looks at both costs, it looks at customer segmentation, it looks at revenue. We've developed a new target operating model, and then certainly we need a new structure that is going to be underpinning that and enabling the new way of doing business. We've embraced 4IR and certainly digital migration. So example, AI and algorithms will be used to make sure that we ask the right questions and we give our customers the right content at the right time and certainly also the right data. Data management becomes very important, and we'll have a huge focus on business intelligence within the organization and making sure that we make informed decisions. So that focus will be obviously both on the content and the consumer data. Then we'll leverage broadcast and broadband platforms. As I mentioned earlier, we are currently only on linear and a limited amount. There's about 500,000 households on DTT. And we do need to be able to play in the DTH space. Number one, it's got 100% footprint in the country. Number two, it is a far cheaper distribution network, and certainly we would be able to reap the benefits of that. The other advantage that gives us is to digitize much faster. The president has said that he wants to auction off the spectrum this year. We'd be able to move much faster. With that, we'll be able to have additional channels, and obviously with that, we grow the local industry as well. So exploit our unrivaled and sought-after content. And I mentioned earlier, top radio stations, 9 out of the top 10. Our TV, of the top 10 most viewed programs, we have 9 of that 10. And then all this is underpinned by people, of course. And we are implementing a culture revitalization program as well. So, we've developed a new target operating model, and the guiding principles that we used for the target operating model and certainly the new organization structure that we are wanting to implement is the turnaround plan that was developed, the preconditions that were set by National Treasury, and our very own strategic goals. Now, our turnaround strategic objective is to develop a holistic operating model for the corporation, inclusive of a proposed organization structure. National Treasury's condition, the second one, was that we must be identify a list of initiatives for revenue enhancement and cost cutting, and reduction in staff costs was one of the preconditions for the bailout. And then on our human resources is to develop a dynamic and motivated fit-for-purpose workforce. So if you look at our new target operating model, it's future-proof. It enables the reduction of cost without compromising business continuity. And I mean, Dudu will tell you, we haven't increased, for example, the costs for the local industry probably in the last 10 years. And we do need to address that. So while we need to reduce costs, it is can't be at the expense of certain the industry as well. And then we need to focus on technology as an enabler, and then certainly the right business decisions we need to make. Now, if you look at the objectives that we use in our target operating model, the first one is revenue. And obviously, through the mandate that we currently have, our funding comes through revenue. So 97% of our funding is through revenue. Only 3 is through government grants. And so that has to be a core focus. We are strong focus on content as well. That is obviously getting the compelling content and distributing that. Our business models and platforms, our costs at the moment for Centec distribution is exceptionally high. And it is not feasible to continue that way. We're looking at our business processes, people, culture, and then obviously the structure as well. Now, one of the challenges that we've realized is that our business was basically structured on old thinking and certainly old operating models. And this is just the distribution of our radio, just to use it as an example. So if I were to just use the Eastern Cape and Western Cape more because it's less sparsely distributed, it's a bit cluttered on top here, you'll see that our current operating model would say that Mhlobo, our radio station based in Port Elizabeth, would have strategies just catering for that radio station within the Eastern Cape. Moreover, their staff complement would be duplicated as if that radio station was a standalone radio station or a monoliner. If you look at the Western Cape, we've got Goedhoop over there, and they would have exactly the same. I just look at the lost opportunities that we have. Within the Western Cape, we've got 1.5 million viewers of Mhlobo. But there's no strategy around them. There's no staff that is actually exploiting that as well. Because the focus of our radio stations is regional based. In our new operating model, we're changing that. In fact, of our 19 radio stations, only 3 of them are actually regional radio stations. Every single one, as you can see here, has a presence in at least 6 to 9 other provinces. So our operating model is regional radio stations, yet they are actually national radio stations. And obviously with digitization of radio coming onto the table now as well, this would be the advantages that we have. We would be able to play out various advertising campaigns, both in the Eastern Cape and in the Western Cape, simultaneously targeting different markets and obviously then growing the revenue accordingly. So our turnaround plan, as you know, was developed some time back already by the department and by GTAC. It has and is underpinned by the strategic pillars of the organization. And there is an extract there of the turnaround plan as well, what the major cost drivers are, and so forth. I'm not going to go too much into detail. This is a public document, and obviously it has been shared extensively. If we look at our funding model and human resources around that, and we compare it with our competitors, we'll actually see that eMedia only has 11% of the expenditure that they're spending on employees. MultiChoice has 15, and they spend 40% on content. BBC has 29%, and they spend 53% on content. Now, BBC is probably the closest model that we have to the South African context. Yet, if we compare ourselves, is they have 100% collection rate for their television licenses, and they actually fund themselves from there. If we look at ourselves, we've got 41% employee cost, and we're only spending 22% on content. You've seen earlier that content is king. Everything revolves around having compelling content and to be able to exploit that. And we have to be able to move and get that balance right. Moreover, our funding model is, as I said, 97% is from revenue generation. Of that, 12% comes from licenses. We have a 70% default rate within South Africa with people not paying their television license. Now, you've seen that there's 10 million customers out there that is on DTH. So they've got a satellite solution. A huge percentage of that is not paying their television license, yet they are paying substantially more for that subscription on a monthly basis than they would for an annual license. So if you look at our turnaround plan and the reasons why we need to optimize, and we're probably 10 years too late for this. It should have happened 10 years ago. So right now we find ourselves in severe economic pressures, and obviously that has been exacerbated by COVID-19 as well. And it's a world trend in terms of advertising revenue going down. But there's operational requirements as well. We are overstaffed. There's numerous members of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee that have actually, and I quote, said we are bloated and we have been for a while. Now, there's an argument that we should be doing a skills audit to reskill people. And yes, that is important. But the skills audit is important for developing a personal development plan. It's important for talent management, and certainly for succession planning as well. If you have a bloated structure, training them and reskilling them is not going to help at all. We know as a fact that digitization brings automation, and with that, a lesser dependency on humans. So digitizing our business is actually going to make things worse and not better in terms of job creation. There's also this misunderstanding around a 189 process and where we are. And I think it's important to mention, in the PCC and a couple of our other people that have commented on this have stated that our 189 process has been premature. Now, it's important to remember that we have issued a 189 notice to start the consultation process. We have not issued a 189 notice to terminate employees. And as part of the consultation process is developing criteria, but it's also looking for alternatives to minimize the impact of 189. Now, that is a clearly legislative process, and we are being facilitated through the CCMA. Somehow, people felt that there's a greater success possibility if they were to do consultations or get a third party to do that consultation outside of the CCMA process, and to front your earlier point of political interference, that's probably why we had the sessions last night. But we welcome the sessions and the consultation that needs to occur so that we come to the correct decisions. Now, there was a couple from both unions last night that made some suggestions, and all of those things are valid suggestions that should be done within the consultation process. And we have actually extended the invitation and said outside of the normal CCMA facilitated sessions, which will be the four sessions, we are open to have as many sessions as possible. And some of the unions have actually asked us to have that because the documents that they've asked us for, they didn't understand, and they would like us to present that, and we're open to that. Now, let's look at the impact of COVID. Now, bearing in mind that we are being prevented from digitizing our business completely, you'll see this quote over here that the prediction is that we might be going into greater online advertising revenue than on the linear side of that. How are we going to be meeting that?
Ian, if I can just ask you to just to kind of wrap up so that we've got some time for discussion.
Will do. I'll take one more minute. Thanks, Franz. So what we will be doing over there, we've come up with a new business model, and we're certainly going to be looking at the revenue side of things. But National Treasury has also identified one of the things as being having partnership agreements. So, Franz, I'll end it right there.
Great. Thank you very much. And obviously, there's a lot of food for discussion. And before I ask Dudu and Hannes to come in, and I'm sure there will be a lot of focus on this issue of retrenchment, you know, it seemed to me that when I was looking at these presentations and listening to you now, basically four significant ideas stood out for me. Firstly, the assumption that there is no public money to be got to any significant extent. I think you said 3% comes from the government at the moment. It's one of the points that Dudu makes, I mean, in the SOS submission. But your assumption in terms of what you're saying is really the public purse is not going to support the SABC. Secondly, I was really interested to see, and it's kind of, it's not addressed as directly as all that, but basically I think the SABC is saying that DDT has been a waste of money, and to some extent that we should move on and do find solutions that give unserved people access to television signals off a satellite. Thirdly, it sounds to me like you're pushing very hard to change the relationship with DSTV and other carriers around must-carry rules, around license collection, and then, of course, the big one also is around headcount and skills. Just on the first three, before we get on to the skills, is that correct? I mean, you're assuming no public money, you're giving up on DTT, and you really were pushing hard for regulatory change, which will even the playing field, in your view, between yourselves and the commercial players.
Thanks, Ron. So the first one is not an assumption, it is a fact. So we have been told by National Treasury there will be no more bailouts. And as you know, if we're not going to get bailouts, we either funded by revenue that we generate ourselves, or we have to have a government grant. And we have been told there isn't any money for a government grant, nor is there any money for a bailout. So it's not an assumption, that is a fact. When it comes to DTT, no, I'm not saying that, and we're certainly not saying that DTT was a waste of money. When DTT was implemented, it was the right thing to do at that time. However, It has come to the end of life, basically, that technology. And it's going to be with us for a while, but Centec would have to upgrade their network to be able to maintain the same level of coverage at a huge cost. And we are saying that we need to balance. Right now, the policy, the regulation says that we must have 86% on DTT and 14% on DTH. And we're saying that that regulatory changes has to happen for the interest of SABC and certainly for the interest of the industry and for the country as well. Now, it would cost government nothing if that regulations were changed immediately and we are able to determine our own footprint for DTH and DTT. And we certainly, everybody would benefit from that. So in terms of our relationship with DSTV, yes, that regulatory changes has to occur. So there needs to be some form of a levy that we get from them, or we are able to get them to collect those license fees on our behalf. The subscriber base is not paying license fees to us. They are paying their subscription to DSTV, and it is a known fact that most of them are consuming our content on the DSTV platform, and yet we are not getting any benefit of that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much. That's very useful. Then, of course, I mean, as you've also zoned in on this issue of skills and headcount. I mean, you're saying that these notices are begin a process of consultation, but in fact, I mean, your own plans, as you presented them before, said you would finish the skills audit before you go into a retrenchment mode. I mean, aren't the critics right in that regard? You should have finished the skills audit before going down this road.
So thanks, Franz. So the skills audit is not related to a 189 process. And we've been quoted out of context. We never once said that it's not relevant. The skills audit is very relevant. And I mentioned earlier, it's relevant for developing personal development plans, for talent management, and certainly for succession planning as well. But a skills development audit is not a prerequisite for a 189 process. It actually makes no sense linking the two. Because if you have a bloated structure and you do a skills audit on that, you want to then... because that's what the unions are saying, that we must now reskill people so that they can take up other roles within the organization. There isn't other roles. There is duplication of effort and function. And with digitization, there's even going to be less. If you look at for ourselves, we've got over 3,000 employees. Our competitors have less than 1,000 employees, yet they're running 20 to 30 channels. We're only running 4 channels. That shows you the level of bloatedness within our organization.
Okay, thanks. Let me just remind everyone that we're here discussing the SABC together with Dudu Makuse, with Ian Plaukies, as well as Hannes de Buisson. As we're on this issue of retrenchments, I'm sure Hannes, on behalf of BMAU, has some feedback, some points to make. Hannes, what is your view of where we are with regard to these issues?
Thanks, Franz. Yeah, let me just say a few things. The first one is I saw on Ian's presentation, he said that the Section 189 notice, one of the CCMA commissioners has said that is the best notice that they've ever seen. The very same commissioner said that he's not listening to SABC News because it's biased. So, you know, it's neither here nor there, the statement that has been made about the notice. The problem that we have is that the SABC cannot be compared to any other broadcaster in the world. Because there is no other broadcaster in the world that by law must broadcast in 11 official languages. Now, just in terms of news, we've not seen officially a structure. The report back that we have received is that it seems that the SABC wants to remove the value chain in terms of each of those languages out of the system, saying that, for instance, in the Khoza language value chain, it's not necessary to have a bulletin editor and have some value checks in that system. All of that can be collapsed into a flatter structure, which is going to impact, if that is the case, on the quality of what is going to be put out at the end of the day. So the other thing and the other point that I want to make is that the SABC has a unique model, a model where it has, it's not a pure public broadcaster, it has got a commercial arm, and the commercial part was supposed to make money for the public broadcasting side of the business. That part has failed as a result of the fact that management has not positioned the SABC timeously for this vortex that is that we currently been caught and we're at the eye of the storm. So the problem is that the low-hanging fruits are always to cut employees, because that is the cost. One of the previous annual statements of the SABC, it has been specifically stated that broadcasting is a human, people-intensive job. We cannot be compared. We cannot be compared to a competitor who's running 30 commercial channels, but all of that is automized, and there is no special skills that is needed in terms of the language in which those channels must be presented. So to use the 41% figures in terms of what the SABC say is the cost involved, that is not correct. And once you increase the revenue, that makes then a difference to that percentage. This is my opening remarks in respect of this.
So you're saying, Hannes, actually the employment levels, the staffing levels at the SABC are perfectly fine. I mean, what do you make of the preliminary results from the skills audit that say that there is a huge mismatch of qualifications between people and the jobs that they do?
Well, that skills audit is fatally flawed. The consultant who has conducted that particular skills audit is on record, who said that the skills audit questionnaire will not correctly capture the skills. We are not saying that the SABC is not allowed to right size itself, but we are saying that what we need to do is we need to see evidence of this bloated structure. If you talk about, for instance, human resources, the SABC is the only company in the world that we're aware of that has got, like, I think 5 or 7 general managers in human resources. Most definitely, that is an anomaly. You don't need that kind of structure in terms of, for instance, human resources. But when we talk about operational issues, when we talk about jobs that needs to be done, the support structure in terms of the broadcasting people, we have not seen evidence that there are that the SABC is overstaffed. In fact, the SABC is currently appointing. How do you appoint if you say that you are overstaffed? And it's not an excuse to say, while we are filling critical positions, the very same person that has been appointed at IT, there is nothing special to that particular skill that someone, for instance, inside the SABC could not do. But we are appointing people from outside. News has been complaining about having shortage of staff. We know that there are people that currently are performing 2 people's jobs at News. So we have not seen evidence in terms of that. And the skills audit as it stands, means absolutely nothing. It's null and void because the consultants themselves have said that a questionnaire is not able and capable to capture the correct skills of employees.
Thanks. I'd be interested to hear what Ian has to say to that also. But let's hear from Dudu. I mean, you put forward a set of ideas just the other day, I think. And you seem also to be accepting that there is some need for right sizing. But just give us some idea of what SOS is feeling about the situation. What your attitude is to the steps being proposed by the SABC. You're muted.
There we go. Thank you. So I think in the long and short of it really is that for the SOS coalition, we want to see an institution that is able to deliver on the public interest mandate. Whether that requires, you know, moving people around the organization or reskilling or whatever, that's an operational issue. But I think we would be disingenuous to not take cognizance of the SABC's history, particularly in recent years as well, where it was publicly documented in its financial documents that they had all kinds of salary increases, all kinds of promotions and things that added to this situation. And I can accept the point that perhaps if you're saying that 42% of your expenses is the right amount in relation to an organization of that size, what I'm not hearing is how a labor and staff are going to contribute to increasing the revenues so that 42% becomes a sustainable figure. You know, I think we're not being honest about the fact that the independent production sector has shed a lot of jobs over the years as part of, you know, the SABC's inability to meet its financial obligations. And for us to focus just on the institution and the people inside it, while that might be the center of its activities, it's a non-starter. We need the SABC itself to be clear and commit to the fact that it is a public broadcaster, which by default then also means it won't ever be profitable, but it should be able to survive in a digital environment. And we need to be clear about the fact that we need to amend legislation and regulations to give them the amount of flexibility that is required to survive in this new environment. I think to simply just say it is either yes to no to retrenchments or no to retrenchments is a very simplistic avenue to take. There's a lot of other nuanced approaches that we can take, some of which have already been put on the table, such as must carry, must pay, such as the collection of license fees from subscribers. It would literally cost 22 rand and 8 cents on every single DSTV holder's subscription to collect those license fees in a year. So these are some of the things that we should just be making plans to make happen while we figure out how to address the 42%, 22% discrepancy. Because if you look at it superficially, it doesn't make sense that you would have this huge public mandate, have to deliver on 11 languages, and then you're spending 22% of your budget to deliver that content. And you're saying that your staff internally are actually doing double jobs. So one person is doing two jobs. You've got to right size it and rejig the entire thing. And I think both sides are going to have to give to meet in the middle here.
Would you agree, Dudu, that given what you've said, that it is premature now to begin the retrenchment process?
I'm not sure if it's premature. I think it's for us, it's about, have you exhausted all other opportunities or all other avenues? Can you show evidence that you have? And once you have done so, then follow the right process, follow due process, and be just and fair about it. We don't want to see a situation where all the juniors are let go or all the content production people are let go when we know very well that even in a digital environment, you're going to need all those people. So you almost can't take a hammer to the situation. You need a scalpel, and you need to be clear about why people are either being let go of or being moved into different positions.
I mean, your proposal also suggests that there should be public money. I mean, Ian says it's very clear. It's just not on the table. I mean, it wasn't on the table before COVID. Now it's completely out of the question. Surely that's an unrealistic suggestion.
I think it's a suggestion that we want to keep on the table because of how we've seen that when there is money available, but there's no legislation or regulation or even policy to support how that money is going to be spent, it almost always gets just siphoned off and nobody knows what happened to it. Just like what happened when the SABC sold off some of its properties, you know, 2 decades earlier. So we want to be in a position where if we get into a situation where public money is available, then it should be ring-fenced specifically for the mandate, because that's where the SABC is complaining the most, and that's also where Labour is saying you need all these people to deliver on this mandate. So if we are having a public broadcaster, the public purse to some degree has to fund that public mandate.
And I mean, what you've heard, what I'm hearing, both from Dudu and from Hannes, with some differences in emphasis and strength, I think, is the sense that while right-sizing and some job losses may be inevitable, you really haven't done enough to demonstrate that that's now the essential and the only way to balance the books. Yeah, we
thank
can
you.
Hear.
Yes, so that's exactly the purpose of consultation, so that we can work through these things and see what are the alternatives to retrenching. So, I mean, Hannes has not just now, but on numerous occasions agreed with us that there is a need for right-sizing. And he cited just HR as an example, where there's 5 GMs in HR, and he said that that's unprecedented. And we agree with him. And so that's the whole idea of the consultation process, so that we can share what the proposed structure should be, get input from the union members and from other non-union members as well, and come up with the optimal structure. And if we are going to be going down the retrenchment route, what the criteria will be for that. So I fully agree with him. I fully agree that we need to look at additional revenue streams as well. In fact, we're doing exactly that. Within the next week or two, we'll be making announcements. So prior to COVID-19, we started the year off with a planned deficit of 400 million. We had additional plans that we obviously have been working on that would have created additional revenue streams. And we were very bullish that we would have actually closed that 400 million rand gap this current financial year. So based on the turnaround plans, it would take us 2 years to break even. We were quite confident that we would have actually brought it in this year. However, with COVID, it has left us with a deeper hole that we need to come up with some other alternative methods of closing that gap. So we have looked at the revenue side of the business and how we can and deal with that. The two biggest cost drivers for the organization is labor costs and distribution costs. And we are in discussions with Centec as well to see how we can reduce that cost. And 2 days ago in the PCC, the Deputy Minister actually mentioned that that might be an option that they could facilitate in terms of seeing how we reduce that cost. All of those things we have worked on, are working on, and certainly are open to that discussions. That's exactly why you have a consultation process in the 189 process, which is facilitated, as I said, by the CCMA. So we're open to all of those suggestions. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, I'm conscious of time. We've got another 10 minutes. Let me just once again invite everybody who's watching us or tuning in some form to join the conversation, either by sending us a voice note or by making a point in the chat or the Q&A function, and we'll try and bring that into the conversation, or then to extend the discussion onto social media on whatever platform you want to use. But I do want to spend a few minutes looking more widely at the bigger picture questions. I mean, we've spent a lot of time now on the immediate situation. And of course, you know, the minute anybody says retrenchments, that kind of squeezes aside any other considerations. But I think it would be remiss if we didn't think about public broadcasting in the digital world. When I was looking at your documents before this session, it seemed to me that there was really not very much in the plans that I saw in terms of adapting the SABC to the digital world. Your presentation now to us, I mean, I think you started there and you made various points. But I would like to ask all three of you just to quickly say something about how you see public broadcasting in South Africa, given the language issues, in the quite soon it'll be an almost completely digital world. Let me start at the other end. Let me start with Dudu. How do you see public broadcasting's role in and shape, let me say, in the new world?
Thank you. I think public broadcasting in the digital era becomes more about the public interest and people-centeredness of the quest of the content and of the programming. I'm imagining we'll be fully immersed in a multi-platform environment. Also, this is dependent on the fact that, you know, at that point in time, you expect ubiquitous internet or other DTH technologies to allow for universal access. And in that kind of environment where there's so much content and so much information available, it's even more important that you have at least one entity that is focused on the social, cultural, and political goals that are captured in what it means to have a public mandate. I see delivery of not just audiovisual content in different languages, but also websites and other platforms in our 11 official languages, so that you start preserving the culture as well, not just from what we hear and see, but also from what we read. So, yeah.
So it's a question really of becoming a public broadcaster that uses all the platforms, particularly the digital platforms where people are.
Absolutely.
I mean, how does that work financially, though? Because as we know, a lot of the online money goes overseas. We don't see it here.
I think that's the biggest challenge. And, you know, the 10-year delay really in South Africa's digital migration project has been disastrous on multiple fronts, because had we migrated at the time when we were supposed to, when the technology was still fit for purpose, we would have started hacking out some of these business models. But now we've lost what was essentially the last remaining main revenue stream, which was advertising. And in that kind of environment, we also have the additional problem of having to collect money either through fees, subscription fees, freemium models from a population that is unemployed. And so the inequality and unemployment factor is going to be a huge inhibitor, I think, in our ability to collect digital revenues on those platforms. And it's something that requires constant experimentation right now, rather than to wait for when the internet is everywhere.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think one of the things that one would really like to see from the SABC is a little bit more experimentation. I was seeing the other day that the BBC is developing an artificial intelligence assistant, a British voice, because all the others are American, that will assist in, calling up whether it's news or weather or whatever it is. I mean, that's just fascinating and interesting. But of course, one gets that there are immediate challenges that the SABC has to confront. Hannes, what does public broadcasting look like to you in a digital world?
Ranjia, I think, public broadcasting will be public broadcasting. It is just different platforms that, as Dudu has said, and I agree with her, it's just different platforms where the SABC in particular must go and look and follow those people. I'm not so sure whether DTT is really dead. Whether the majority of our population who seems to be quite poor would be able to afford, for instance, satellite kind of technology. maybe internet and free internet and that kind of issues would be something. I have seen the other day, and I was quite astounded by what is called a loon, and I had to go and Google and see what is a loon, and it seems to be that Google has put up some balloons that they transmit internet, free internet, over rural areas. It has been actually been listed as aircraft, and one can follow them. So that is most certainly the kind of technology that one would look at. But if we are going to look at the majority of our population who's reliant on mainly radio for their news in particular, I am not so sure if satellite would be serving those particular part of our population. The main thing is that I think that there should be no competition in the public broadcasting part of things, because that is a mandate by law that must be delivered. The commercial side of the SABC, that is the side that's actually supposed to fund the public side of the SABC. And here's the thing, it has funded it successfully in the past. From the last 10 years, I think that it is only since this last administration that has been put out there, that has been kicked out of the SABC, it is since they took over that the SABC ended up in this huge financial problems. But previously, the SABC has posted surpluses. So it is able to fund itself. It is just that, in our view, the SABC has been fast asleep. They were waiting, and I don't say that everything is their fault. They've been waiting for government in terms of DTT and the rollout of that. I saw in one of the financial statements that I think that they spent billions of rands in putting equipment and infrastructure in place to deal with DTT. But that just never came off the ground, and that is a cheaper option in my view than the satellite thing. But most certainly it is our duty as a public broadcaster to continue to deliver news and entertainment in the 11 different languages. This is what we must do. It is for the SABC to follow that market to make sure. Certainly and most certainly the SABC must be funded. If the commercial side of the SABC is unable for one or other reason to fund the public service side of it, then either the SABC must then do away with that particular part and then purely become a public broadcaster that has been funded by government.
Thank you very much. I mean, as we've heard, and I think it's common cause that the government just isn't going to give that kind of money. I'm running out of time, but there is a comment here from Louise Uester, who says content equals is king and should be the most important. Yet in the proposed structure for radio, the word content does not appear. It seems to be the same structure and jobs, just with a smaller structure. You need content producers, content presenters, etc., and then push that to the platforms, be they linear and so on. Currently in South Africa, 70% or plus of all radio listeners still listen via traditional radio, with half via mobile and cell, etc. Ian, we're almost out of time. Two questions. Is satellite too costly to offer as an alternative to DTT? And secondly, maybe just a line on the content argument that was just made. Really, a sentence.
The content line, I disagree with Louise. Content is king for us, and we are able to be 9 out of 10 because our content is good on radio, and certainly 9 out of 10 because our content is good on television. In terms of DTT, I didn't say DTT is dead. DTT makes sense in densely populated areas, and it will always be part of our platforms that we use. DTH, you are going to be spending billions of rands upgrading a DTT platform where you can use that money and offset that and give people that cannot afford a dish instead of buying them ID TVs and a whole host of other money that would be wasted. In terms of where, is that it?
I think so. I want to say thanks very much, and I'm sorry to cut the conversation short. Somebody said to me beforehand we could do a couple of hours on these issues, and perhaps there will be other opportunities. But I want to thank the three of you, Ian, Dudu, and Hannes, for your participation. I want to thank the Konrad Adenauer Foundation for their support, IONO, the Abundant Media Group, RCS, Crossfade, and the NAB. Please remember that we are still on with daily sessions on a whole range of different topics as Radio Days Africa. Tomorrow we'll deal with gifted. Thank you very much. Please check out radiodaysafrica.co.za. Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining this Radio Days Africa session. Click to watch or download the podcast. Radio. That was the Radio Days Africa podcast, brought to you by the Vix Radio Academy.